Thank you. Okay, Planning Commission meeting will come to order. This is my first opportunity chairing one of these, so I would ask any board member or staff member, if I miss a step, I'll endeavor to do what I can, but please correct me. I've been married 40 years. I'm used to it. So we have no continued items. We have two items on the agenda today, plus the consent of the minutes, and then two regular items, a wind solar energy overlay and a variance of use. Today's voting members shall be Mr. Creeley, Mr. Joya, Mr. Mastin, Ms. Lucia Therese, Ms. Dillon, Ms. Friedman, and the chair. And we'll begin this morning with any report items.
Mark Gebhardt. Is this on now?
Yes.
Yeah, Mark Gebhardt, Planning Community Development. A couple of report items, and the first one is that Craig Dossie would normally be given your report items. Craig's at the Board of Commissioners meeting today where several staff members and Craig are receiving an award for county's innovation process for the EDARP system relative to the finding access to all those prior records. Mike Rebinar and Dennis Archuleta are receiving the awards, and Craig's there to support them and be given the presentation. We're not going to break the meeting so you can get to listen to those presentations, but he asked me to come to this meeting today since he's downtown. The second thing, and before we get into the regular items, as I'm sure Craig has reported, and I've been out for a little bit, Craig has reported that the county's doing a water master plan, and as a part of that contract, and it's a multi-year contract, as a part of that, there's public involvement process that the county's going to, and there's a way, and unfortunately the county's website is going away in part, so you'll have to find some things in a different way, but we placed some of the public information for doing a water survey on our web page. It's on the county's main page. We're going to do probably some press releases, probably something in the newspaper, and we've asked all the districts that are involved in this to spread the word, because the effort is to try to accomplish 200 people filling out the survey to try to receive input over the county's water master plan. We're somewhat late in the process timing-wise, and we'd hope to have had this done already, but Ramir is going to give you a demonstration right on our webpage, hopefully for the audience here and present that concerned about it for the Planning Commission. It's a very simple survey that goes in and gets your input about various issues on water aspects. Certainly the Planning Commission is welcome to put their input in. You representative, all people are representative of El Paso County, and this doesn't matter whether you're in the city or outside the city, but it's really in part targeted to those districts and those entities that service water outside of the city.
Good morning, Planning Commission. Ramir Fitzpatrick, Planning and Community Development. And we'll provide you each individually a link to the survey, and we would ask that in your professional and also private circles and cones of influence that you would share this and encourage your peers to participate and share this also. As Mark stated, that this is one avenue that we're using to involve the public. There will be a series of community meetings and other ways of outreach to solicit that public input. But when you go to the survey, this is through MetroQuest, it takes a few minutes to go through. So you begin, and there's an interactive mapping tool. So I'll just kind of pick an area in the county randomly. So let's say this is the area that I live in, and that there are issues that I think that should be addressed, maybe water supply. So I can pull one of these down and kind of drop it in an area where I think there's an issue, and I can, you know, type in a comment to go with my overall concern. You know, maybe there's concern in some portions of the area where there's aging infrastructure. You know, and so that's my concern, is the age of the water infrastructure. So again, an individual can pull as many of these down as they deem necessary to convey their thoughts. Again, the more you zoom in, you know, there's opportunity to pull more down with comments involved. So that's the mapping component. Then there's a opportunity to provide some input on conservation issues, and this is just a single entry, and it can be as short or as long as an individual needs. But this is basically to share your ideas and, or questions related to any water conservation strategies that you think El Paso County should consider. And so, as opposed to the first interactive exercise, this one is actually asking for what are your thoughts? You know, how, give us your ideas. What can we do to help? And so obviously that's a good opportunity there to get some really good public input. And then there's a strategy section, and it's broken up into five different areas, building and landscaping. That's something that you hear us talk about all the time, screening and buffering and landscaping requirements. Well, how is that affected by a myriad of water issues? And so here, for example, encourage green building, reduce tap fees for builders installing xeric or low water use landscaping, and they can rank this. Maybe it's not that important to me, so I'll put a one, or maybe it's very important to me, so I can click on here and rate this as a five to give it a very high rating. There's questions on regionalization, expansion of CSU boundaries, expansion of utility boundaries, and extensions of water networks. There's a land use and infrastructure section on renewable water, and on water sources and water quality. So after this is completed, the final tab is one where we're inviting the participant to give us a little bit of information about themselves, but also to provide some follow-up contact information. If we're having a meeting, we may be able to send out a blast to those individuals specifically who've participated to usher them to the next step of involvement, or to be able to track this so that we can follow up on some other issues as necessary. So again, the survey only takes about 5 minutes to complete. Again, we ask that you would distribute this among your professional and private circles, encourage participation, and what we can accomplish. Are there any questions about this survey?
Commissioners, any questions? Yes, Mr. Creeley.
This is at least some of this from those of us who are competent in almost nothing.
Can you lift your microphone?
Incompetent in most things. I wonder whether it's technically difficult for people like me, or do you know what I'm saying? Talking about infrastructure, I don't have a clue.
Right.
And I don't think anybody else has much of a clue.
And if you don't have a clue, then it's probably best that you not comment on that particular one. But the options are wide enough that there's something that's going to hit some sensitive target. And if an individual doesn't know about infrastructure or water quality, you know, they can pull the tab down and say,
"What is it?
What is this? What does this mean?"
Okay.
And so again, that type of input is important because we're going to be using surveys like this not just for the Water Master Plan, but in upcoming planning events. But it's just another tool, another method to try to reach some portion of the population. But that's definitely helpful.
Do you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
It's just it can be technically what you're talking about, a 30-year water or 300-year water supply.
The average person has no idea.
Not a clue.
And so we would expect that may be left over or ranked at a low priority, or we'll get a call.
What
hey, what's this all about?
Okay.
So, yeah.
Just thanks.
Mm-hmm.
Any other questions? Mr. Joya?
Yes, Mr. Real quick, Romero, you said you're going to be sending this out to all of us, at least a link to everything. Do you have an email that's put together that maybe has a little bit of information,
yes.
Like almost a marketing email that we can
yes.
then forward to our networks?
Absolutely.
Okay, excellent.
Mm-hmm.
If you could send that to all of us, that'd be great. Thank you.
Yeah. Thanks.
Good point.
Yeah, Mr. Mastin.
Just a quick question on tab two, the requirement to choose three things. If a person only has one concern, but they're required to choose three, aren't you going to skew your data by forcing them to put two things that really don't matter to them?
Let's, I may have started the survey, and I believe it will allow them to, if they put one, it'll allow them to take that, if it puts none. But the consultants will sort out some of that, so there doesn't necessarily have to be three, but they'll just kind of compile the comments and group those that are similar.
I mean, is it possible to change that verbiage on the top? Because people are going to read that and go, well, I got to choose three, and they're going to and say that, like take for instance where I live, the only issue anybody ever has is the quality of the water. It gets discolored when it's heated up, and that's the only issue anybody has. But if they're required to put two more things on there, it's going to I just think it's going to skew data, and it's going to your people that are compiling are going to be compiling information that really doesn't matter to
right.
people.
It does allow you to move on. I just worked that exercise. It does allow you to move on. It's just the consultants would like you to. I'll see what can be done maybe to tweak that language. But this has been rolled out, and so I learned the hard way that sometimes with some of these programs, the smallest tweak can add days to the rollout time. But I'll definitely follow up with that and see if we can make that a little more intuitive and user-friendly.
All right, thank you.
Mm-hmm. Any other questions? Thank you, Ramirez.
Thank you.
There's not a specific timeline for the survey being up, but don't expect it to be up too long. Because we need to get the data from a wide range of people, but if they don't get the data, we're going to keep facilitating trying to get more people involved in it. Several other report items that are on your agenda were as you normally see, we could have the overhead. You normally see the building permit data. It'll show up here in a second. Standard data that follows trends from the past. I don't know how deep you want to get into this. Ramirez is the absolute expert on all this data, but he just disappeared. But one of the things that I noticed is there was a fair number of multifamily in the city and very little in the county. This time period, over 200 multifamily units in the city in this time period, plus the additional 200 units as well. Your Planning Commission meeting today includes, and you've already gone over a little bit of that Planning Commission. This is actually a different item coming at a later meeting. That's from your prior meeting that was postponed to this following meeting. The record was essentially closed. There are several members of the Planning Commission that weren't at that prior meeting. To keep the voting to be consistent, and I believe one of the Planning Commissioners is not going to be here, the April 17th meeting, Tracy has prepared the record relative to that prior hearing. So if you would like to or would plan to review that record on your computer at home, she's got a hard drive, a thumb drive there you can review that will allow you to then vote at that April 17th Planning Commission.
And I would encourage any commissioners who had not heard that item to please do take a look at that thumb drive and review that. Otherwise, we're limited to the exact five same people that heard all the testimony. So if those of you who didn't were able to do that, it would expand our options relative to voting, and I'd appreciate that.
So on your agenda today is two different requests that Tracy's has already gone over, the wind and solar and a variance of use. With regard to prior items that the Board of Commissioners heard, and one of these is fairly important since you recommended denial of it, the two items in Woodmore you had recommended approval of, they were approved by the Board of Commissioners. The retreat at Timber Ridge, you had a very extensive discussion on it and recommended disapproval. The Board of Commissioners had a very extensive discussion on it, but recommended on a 3-2 vote for approval. Carrie Parsons can address some of those questions if you have them specifically, but essentially that was how the board voted on those.
Sure. And Mr. Joy.
If you have the answers for this. When it went before the Board of County Commissioners, was there any substantial change to the item that made them consider it differently than we did?
Good morning, Carrie Parsons with Planning and Community Development. There was not an actual change to the plan itself. The conditions that were presented to you were also presented to the board. One change would have been that the Black Forest Land Use Committee pulled their support after the Planning Commission hearing. And the assistant county attorney, Mr. Emmons, read into the record, in addition to the approval criteria, some statutory regulations in terms of the sketch plan and the fact that the sketch plan does not set zoning, nor does it provide a vested property right. So there was some clarification there. But ultimately, the Board of County Commissioners was able to find that the small area plan policy, which stated that the density should decrease from the Stapleton Briar Gate, so that major transportation corridor to the north, to the timbered line, which was, if you remember, was a density transition of one dwelling unit at that Stapleton corridor to the north to a one dwelling unit per 5 acres. They were able to take the average of the 2.5 acre lots with the on average 3rd acre lots, combine them to establish a 1 acre dwelling unit, and then tapering it up to get there. So ultimately, as Mark indicated, there was a lot of discussion there, and that was the outcome.
And one more follow-up there. Do you know what was the breakdown, who voted for and against?
Yes, President Glenn in opposition and Commissioner Gonzalez in opposition.
Any other questions? I will tell you that as a comment, I listened to the entire audio of that because I was quite concerned, and I wanted to know the extent to which the Planning Commission's recommendations and thought processes had been included in that discussion. There were very, very few mentions of the Planning Commission, but there were a few. What there was not, however, is any discussion of why the Planning Commission voted the way it did. That may have been in their packet, but they didn't mention that. I will tell you that Commissioner Glenn, when he voted, said, "I will vote with the Planning Commission." So he very explicitly acknowledged that. Some comments up front that it is the Board of County Commissioners' interpretation that matters, not the Planning Commission's, which was a little disappointing but true. The one thing I would say is, as I listened to the Board of County Commissioners, one of the things that a previous chairman had always told us was that, you know, our job is sort of to help the applicants improve their arguments before going before the Board of County Commissioner, whether they're for or against. Everyone can improve their arguments, and to that extent, our advisory is worthwhile. And we should learn from those votes how the Board of County Commissioners thinks. The one comment I have in that regard is, I believe it clear, based on the comments and the discussion, that the Board of County Commissioners does not put as heavy an emphasis on the Black Forest land use and small area plans as do we. They believe that the development in the area is changing the nature of that and that it may well need to be updated. And that's based on comments from several of them. Would you concur with that assessment?
I would concur.
Okay.
And I think staff in the PowerPoint presentation, I somewhat alluded to that. If you remember,
right.
I was bringing in some of the character changes to the area.
Right.
And as you stated, Mr. Curry, the applicant's presentation significantly changed between Planning Commission and the board, and they kind of piggybacked those character changes in the region. And I think that definitely influenced the board's decision.
So, and I did that only just to let us know what they're thinking. So, any other questions for Ms. Parsons? Anything else? Any other report items? Thank you. With that, we will move to consent items. The only item for consent today is the minutes. Did all the commissioners have an opportunity to review those? And were there any changes? Seeing none, we will deem the minutes approved. And we will move to our first item on the agenda on the regular items. It's item number 3, a WSEO, Wind and Solar Energy Overlay, -17-001 for Front Range Midway Solar Energy Generation Plan Overlay District Rezone with 16 conditions, 2 notations, and 1 waiver. Are there 2 waivers or just there, 2 waivers?
2 waivers, sir.
2 waivers. And with that, for everyone in the audience for both items, the way we'll do this is we'll hear an introduction by staff. The applicants will come up and make a presentation. Then we'll hear any comments for the item, any comments against the item. The applicant will have an opportunity to have a rebuttal. There'll be board discussion and then motions and voting. So with that, the staff introduction, Ms. Parsons.
Good morning again, Ms. Parsons, Planning and Community Development. The review engineer for this was actually Elizabeth Nykamp, the review engineer manager for the project. And Ms. Sego, I believe, is going to read the criteria for approval into the record.
Good morning, Commissioners. Lori Sego, Senior Assistant County Attorney. So an overlay is a zoning action. So what a wind and solar energy overlay does is it overlays on top of the existing zoning. It doesn't change the underlying zoning, but it overlays on top of the existing zoning the ability to construct a wind or solar energy generation project in that area pursuant to the criteria in the code. And so the criteria that you're to consider in this particular zoning application are set forth on the slides. And as always, I will try not to read them to you and just summarize. But the criteria that you are to consider is whether the application is in general conformance with the El Paso County Master Plan, or whether there's been a substantial change in the character of the neighborhood since the land was last zoned, that the rezoning complies with all statutory provisions, that the site is suitable for the intended use, and that the application is consistent with specific development standards in the Land Development Code pertaining to the wind or solar energy generation facilities. Whether the application meets the air, water, light, odor, and noise standards established by local, state, and federal regulations. Whether the proposed use will be detrimental to the health, safety, or welfare of the inhabitants of the area. Whether the proposed use will cause undue burden on existing infrastructure. That's it. Thank you.
Any questions for the attorney? And I would mention for the audience, if you plan to speak in favor or against these proposals, speaking to those criteria will help us in our decision-making process. Ms. Parsons.
In terms of issues or concerns, staff has no remaining concerns with this overlay proposal. From adjacent property owners, staff did receive two responses in favor, which you should have copies of in your backup. Staff did receive a return response from the Midway Development Company, but no opinion was provided. You should also have that. That appears as a blank sheet in your packet as well. And then staff did receive a telephone call from the City of Fountain Planning Department and regarding potential access concerns. If future commercial and industrial development did annex into the City of Fountain, therefore services would be available and development would proceed. And we do have Mr. Todd Evans is here from the City of Fountain if there are questions pertaining to that. However, I do not believe that the actual property owner was able to make it down in time for the start of this hearing to address his concerns regarding access. And at this time, I would like to ask Dave Idora with the Tradrins Group to come up and begin his PowerPoint presentation with you.
Thank you. And for everyone, as you come up, please be sure to sign in and then speak into the microphone and state your name for the record. Thank you. I just need you to sign your name in. And
okay.
There you go. Thank you. And then...
I'm going to go ask IT to help open your PowerPoint. Oh, they've got it. Okay.
Can everyone hear me okay? Does this work?
Yes. Okay. And your name for the record?
My name is Dave Idarola, spelled I-A-D-A-R-O-L-A.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Pardon me. My name is Dave Idarola. I'm with Tradewind Energy. I'm the project manager for the Front Range Midway Solar Project. Also with me today from Tradewind is Emily Trubner. She's our environmental and permitting manager. I also have James Turvo, who is our engineering specialist. And also with me is Chris Haas, who is with CORE, and they are our permitting consultant. I'd like to start today with a little bit of background on Tradewind Energy. Tradewind Energy is a nationally recognized renewable energy developer. We were founded in 2002 and are headquartered in Lenexa, Kansas. We have 140 plus full-time employees. Currently, Tradewind has a presence in 25 states that seems to be expanding every day. We have operating assets in both wind and solar. That has culminated in 4.5 gigawatts of contracted and operating projects, equaling more than $5 billion in capital investments. Our operating assets equate to about 1 million, powering about 1 million homes. Here are a few companies that we've worked with in the past. You may know a few of them. Point to T-Mobile, Facebook. I don't know if that's good or bad right now. prior to discussing the project, I wanted to touch on our partner in Enel Green Power. They finance about 90% of Tradewind projects. Enel is currently one of the world's largest renewable energy producers. And as you can see, they're quite versed in financing and operating renewable energy projects. Happy to answer any questions after the presentation regarding that. Before I get into the project specifics, I wanted to present the Planning Commission with a little context on our project evolution. This is a 100 megawatt solar facility that started development in 2013. It's located just south of PPIR off exit 119 off I-25. the project location was determined by our internal siting metrics, which include iridescence review, access to land, access to transmission, and then also market access. These have all been met internally. Once the project has met our internal review criteria. We attempt to secure the site. We currently have 220 acres secured through options to purchase or lease. One of those parcels is a parcel of property owned by the county, for those that don't know. It's the parcel to, I call it the rabbit ears, but it's the western parcel on this map here. Also, we have completed our interconnection review and have received interconnection agreements from WAPA and Public Service, or XL. We started further developing the project in 2015. We completed our ALTA survey, our title review, our geotech and topo survey and environmental reviews, all in preparation to submit to the submit a NEPA application, the National Environmental Policy Act. Is everyone familiar with that? Okay. We submitted that in 2015 and then received a finding of no significant impact in 2016. Our next step was to start preparing our WSEO and 1041 applications, which were submitted at the end of 2017, and that's why we're here today. Here's a map of, just a larger map of the project site. I don't know if there, there is, okay. I just want to point out where we're accessing the project from as we go through this presentation. I think the biggest concern we've received from the local community is how we're impacting roads. 119 is the exit 119 is just right here, and then there's a road called Rancho Colorado that is a private road that runs through the project and then meets a county road that runs through the rest of our project. That is our main point of access, and the majority of our construction traffic will be running through that part of the project. So from 2014 through this year, we've done extensive community outreach. This was done through informational brochure mailing, community meetings, and individual meetings to ensure the community was aware of our intended site development. Through these mini meetings, we've received several comments and concerns and have attempted to address those in our application as well as in our design. You will note we started the NEPA outreach and mailings, and that has continued through an open house that we held here just January 31st of this year. Happy to run through all this, but as you can see, we've sat down with just about everybody in the area that we could think of to try and make sure they were aware of what's going on around them. As far as community composition, you can see there's residential. There's two landfills, well, a landfill and a recycling facility, a Corvette Center, PPRs to the north of us, and Fort Carson's to the west of us. After several meetings with the community, it became clear roads and access were the major concern for the surrounding community members. Due to this, the project is committed to donating to the local public improvement district to help improve some of their roads and help residents improve access to their community. Additionally, during construction, public and private roads will be improved to be used by the project and the community. This will consist mostly of pickup trucks. However, we will be have some cement and 18-wheelers, which will be delivering panels. And those will be the largest trucks that we'll be using during construction. The other major concern that was brought to our attention was the that we would potentially close the private road here. It's in purple right here. And we have committed to the community that we would not close that private road. They use it when conditions are poor, to when their access is poor to the north. So the community members are will still be allowed to use it as they see fit. Again, the project is committed to not closing any roads. Finally, visual impacts are a common concern with solar projects. In order to address this concern, we provided 6 visual simulations at all of our meetings, as well as our NEPA application. And to date, we haven't received any comments or concerns from the community or otherwise with regards to these visual impacts. I will note that we have attempted to address this up front in our application with our design and our setbacks. Through our outreach and informational meetings, we've been able to garner support from the local community members. I know there's only been 2 that I think have been submitted to directly to the county, but I believe we've posted 7 to our application website. As Carrie has noted in her staff report, there are 3 plans that cover this area. The 3 plans all have similar goals. They all focus on natural systems, water resource, visual impact, and land use. We have addressed these particular issues, or felt that we addressed them partially through the NEPA process, which is an extensive review by a federal agency, and then also through our application. And I think that may be pointed out in Carrie's presentation. Finally, the project is requesting a few waivers within its application. First, we've requested a waiver of the development impact mitigation agreement. We have requested this because the project construction will not require oversized loads and result in minimal impact to the community's infrastructure. All roads used during construction will be restored to its pre-existing condition. And if you've been out there, I think hopefully it'll be a little bit of an improvement. And as indicated by the haul route video survey taken on December 13th, 2017, this is shown. I don't know if that's been made available to you or not, but it's posted on our application website. If construction does not begin by June 13th of this year, an additional haul route survey video will be recorded to determine existing haul route road conditions prior to commencing construction. We agreed to do this. The community had some concerns because the roads change after the wet season, and then they do some work on that. So we want to make sure that we're continuously documenting what the conditions are, the roads are, so that we make sure that we can upkeep them. Given this, Front Range is requesting a waiver for the development impact mitigation agreement. The other request that or waiver request that we've asked for is for a PPA at the time of WSEO application. We've requested this waiver because the project is actively working on with multiple utilities who have RFPs in process. Tradewind's model is to permit projects prior to obtaining a PPA to reduce risk associated with the possible loss of security funds that are required by the utility once a PPA is signed. Tradewind has committed that it will submit a PPA at the time it submits a site development plan to the county. Thank you for your time. My team and I are happy to answer any questions.
Commissioners, any questions? Ms. Friedman.
I was wondering, you did a...
Any? I can't.
Our application to WAPA. WAPA is a national. Sorry, I'm just drawing a blank. Western Power Administration, but it's run by the federal government. So anytime you touch that, it triggers a federal nexus.
Ms. Dillon.
You had mentioned residential, but I couldn't tell from any of the maps where the residential is.
Sure. Let me go to the larger map here. So most of the residential is located. Most of the residential is located all to the west of us. It's along this border here, and then goes all the way to Fort Carson. There's a pocket of residential, I think it's called Pioneer Village, that's between us and the Fort Carson fence.
Okay, and one of their access roads is the road that runs through your project?
They have been using it. It's a private road, but when road conditions turn poor up there, and that usually happens during rain or snow when it gets wet, they use that to get access out of their neighborhood.
Okay, thank you.
There's a pocket of residential here, too, I should point out.
Oh.
And their access kind of runs along the outer edge of the project area, and then up north there's another exit that they use to gain access to their neighborhood.
And where is PPIR on this?
PPIR is right up here.
It's up there. Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Any other questions? Chair has one or two. My primary worries on this are with the waivers.
Sure.
You've mentioned that one of the primary concerns that the residents have is the roads and the access.
Mm-hmm.
And yet, with the waiver on the impact study, how are the residents left with little more than a trust us?
Well, so I guess the point I would make as far as that's concerned is we're coming directly off the interstate onto a public road for a very short distance, and then the rest of the roads are internally private roads. As far as the impact to public roads, it should be very minimal, especially with the kind of traffic that are going through there. And we're not using other public roads or don't plan to use other public roads that would impact the residents. And that's why we're asking for that waiver.
I think the issue is, though, that if the impact is really going to be that minor, then the improvements ought to be minor, and that impact study should be relatively innocuous and easy to do. And I'm still trying to figure out why it is that you really don't want to do that impact study and submit it with the application.
Sure. I'll bring Chris up. He can maybe answer that question a little better than I have.
Yes, thank you.
Hi, I'm Chris Hawes with Core Consultants. We supported the permitting of this project. There is a condition in the condition of approval that we worked through with county staff, both planning and engineering, to do the video recording. We didn't want that video to happen too far in advance of construction, so we had language in there that said if construction was to happen in 6 months or 8 months, we would do that video prior so we could get an immediate snapshot of what the road looks like. Condition 14, as part of the approval, does mention that that basically the applicant shall restore both of the roads to the condition, drivable condition, as determined by the director in consultation with the county engineer. So our understanding was that process, and having that as a condition of approval would be we'd work with the engineering department to make sure that the road was in a condition after construction, to the point or in a condition as it was prior to construction. So that being bound to that condition, that the applicant will adhere to committing to restoring those roads to the condition they were right now. So.
Okay, so you said two different things. One was restore it to a drivable condition, and the other was restore it to its current condition. And that's part of the challenge with the condition is that it just says a drivable condition. It doesn't say whether that's good or, I mean, whether that's comparable to the current conditions or worse or better.
Yes, the condition of approval does say drivable condition. So that was the language that was provided.
Right.
So,
okay.
If I may.
Yes, please.
I don't know if you've been out here, but the roads are in very poor shape other than Rancho Colorado.
Right.
And so, I don't want to speak to it directly, but I would say that, as we improve them for construction, it will be an improvement to what they currently are today.
Okay, thank you. Any other questions? Yes, Ms. Friedman. Is your microphone on? Okay.
Though, sorry.
There you go. Great.
Yeah, I was talking to
it's spring.
Okay. Is that better? Yeah.
There
okay.
Go.
Yeah. Okay. Anyway, under policy 6.1.16, it says, development of the proposed site for any other use could be challenging given the strict federal regulations limiting access to the public and other non-utility industries on an energy generation site. So I wonder, how does that play into your making your private road that goes through the energy site, apparently, public?
The road will still remain private, but this portion right here is the, I believe, what the document is referring to. This is federal access. It's the substation.
Okay.
And that I believe that's what it's referring to.
So it's okay to drive by panels. It's just not
yes.
okay to drive by the substation.
Yeah, they've.
Okay.
I believe they've attempted to close it, this particular portion of the road, multiple times. However, given the condition of the roads out there, people still use it.
But the plan is to...
So that there's another road that runs right here through mm-hmm. a portion of the property we will purchase,
mm-hmm.
And that will remain open.
Okay.
So it's this portion that I believe, and I don't want to speak to whoever wrote that, but was that us or was that... Okay.
Okay.
So,
thank you.
But I don't want to put words in your mouth, Carrie, but I believe that's what this...
Okay. Thanks.
Any other questions for the applicant at this time? Thank you.
Thank
staff?
Okay, if I may, I will go through my PowerPoint and then answer any of the questions that I don't answer throughout my PowerPoint, if that's okay with you. Yes? Okay. Again, an aerial map, and one of the questions I can answer straight away is, this is the residential area in here. You can see the residential 2.5 acre lots, and then this is a more recent residential development up in here called Rancho Colorado. This is actually La Cuesta Way, which was just preliminarily accepted into the county, and it is actually asphalt to this point, and then it becomes a gravel road standard down into this private easement. This here is Rancho Colorado. La Hombre View is a private easement that was platted, and actually it covers, each side of it covers multiple lots all the way through here, and it runs through essentially fenced areas of the two substations. So it is my understanding that is the applicant's intent to allow that La Hombre View to be to remain open to the public for use. They will actually be fencing up to it, but not across it. So that would address Ms. Friedman's question, I think, relative to the policy plan. A zoning map. Again, this is the city of Fountain, the Pikes Peak International Raceway up in here, RR5 down in here, RR 2.5 acre lots here, agricultural, a little industrial area where those substations are located, A5 down in here, and this is, of course, the landfill, and then a gravel pit over in this area. As stated by the applicant, this is a request for an overlay, a total of 33 parcels, approximately 1,700 acres with multiple underlying zoning districts. The applicant is also asking for two waivers, as stated. The first waiver, for the record, is a waiver of section 4.3.5D2, which requires that the development impact mitigation agreement shall be required with all wind and solar energy generation plan overlay district applications. Staff is not requiring an impact mitigation with this application due to the minimal, if any, impacts anticipated with this project. Therefore, staff is in support of that waiver. The condition number 14 addresses staff's concerns. This is unlike other, like the wind application that was before you that had significant impacts to infrastructure. We don't foresee those impacts with this type of an application. Therefore, condition 14, it replaces that mitigation agreement. The next waiver requested is a waiver of section 4.3.5, which is the procedures manual, which is our general submittal list requirements, and that he referred to it as a PPA. That's our power purchase agreement. Typically, an applicant would have that in place when coming before you, but the applicant is still working out between the WAPA and the PSCO companies to determine which of those will enter into that power purchase agreement. Staff understands that they cannot move forward with the development of the wind and solar energy arrays without that, so staff has no concerns as to that waiver. A WSCO map, the red hatching, and I apologize on this aerial, it is somewhat difficult to see, is the actual complete overlay area that will impact the underlying zoning. However, the green hatch lines are the actual physical locations of the solar arrays. And I wanted to provide a detail of the substation. So here is the WAPA substation and the PSCO substation. And this is a detail of the proposed substation associated with the solar array if it is approved. And then the proposed underground transmission lines connecting into the existing lines. I know that was very difficult to read in your backup, so I thought it was worthy of showing you this big screen. Land Development Code background. Section 4.3.5, the wind solar energy overlay of the code, was adopted in 2011. That section, sub 8.3.A, states that the WSEO functions in combination with the base zoning districts to both modify the existing standards associated with the base zoning districts and to impose additional requirements and standards on specific properties. That being said, the applicant, very much like a planned unit development, establishes their own dimensional standards for some of the apparatuses within their proposal. That being said, solar panels, they will have a maximum height at 14 feet, the inverter and transformers 14 feet measured from finished grade, the meteorological monitoring poles 14 feet from finished grade, the power poles 90 feet tall from finished grade, and the substation will have a maximum height of 35 feet. On June 6, 2013, the Board of County Commissioners adopted the Appendix B, the Land Development Code, which is titled Guidelines and Regulations for Areas of Activities and State Interest, otherwise known as the 1041 Regulations. The guidelines and regulations serve to facilitate identification, designation, and administration of matters of state interest, of which is included in designated activity of state interest, for site selection and construction of major facilities of a public utility. In other words, in lieu of a approval location, which typically would come before the Planning Commission, a 1041 regulation actually goes before the Board of County Commissioners unless the Planning and Community Development Director elects to approve that administratively. In this case, because of the type of application that it is, the El Paso County Planning and Community Director has determined that this 1041 is eligible for approval administratively if the overlay is approved by the Board of County Commissioners. Are there any questions as to that particular slide? Okay. The background for this project is that in 2014, Tradewinds initiated discussions with planning staff. A formal early assistance was held the spring of 2017. The formal application was submitted late fall 2017. Staff did attend a neighborhood meeting on January 2018. Staff did not notice any concerns by the neighbors. In fact, the neighbors were very supportive and excited to have some potential road improvements in the area. A little bit of policy plan highlights. Section 6, growth and land use. I know I listed several in the packet that you have, but I want to highlight policy 6.13, encouraging new development which is contiguous and compatible with previously developed areas in terms of factors such as density, land use, and access. Next policy, encourage infill development which complements existing uses and consistent with the small area and other adopted plans. Support development which complements the unique environmental conditions and established land use character of each sub-area of the county. Recognize the need for new development and redevelopment to respond to changes in demographic, market, and technological conditions. Allow for new and innovative concepts in land use design and planning if it can be demonstrated that off-site impacts will not be increased and the health, safety, and welfare of property owners and residents will be protected. A little bit of discussion regarding that. Staff did find that the solar array will provide solar-generated electricity to the grid via interconnection with one of the existing substations. Staff found that the industrial character of the neighborhood is compatible with the landfill to the south, the gravel pit to the east, the existing substations, and the overhead power lines. The topography is anticipated to mitigate the views of the facility. The detailed review of the proposed project did include a potential for project-related impacts to existing infrastructure in the area. Staff feels that recommended condition number 14 addresses those possible impacts. Staff recommends that the project will functionally and aesthetically be integrated into the area and will preserve as much of the existing vegetation on the site as possible. Should I keep going? Okay. Section 7 highlights special and unique land uses. Policy 7.1.2, consider the future combined impact of potential additional land use requests when considering individual applications for special and unique land uses, and encourage the multiple use of utility sites and corridors where feasible and appropriate. Again, the solar array site is proposed to be within the existing transmission lines and substations, therefore reducing the number of improvements that would otherwise be needed to construct to facilitate delivery of a solar generated facility if it were elsewhere. The new substation and proposed small section of electrical transmission lines will connect directly into either one of those two substations. Therefore, staff felt it did meet the anticipated policy recommendations of Section 7 of the small area or our policy plan. Section 12 of the policy plan, other services and utilities. Policy 12.4.5 would encourage the use of existing easements for utility installation in order to reduce negative impacts in other areas. And policy 12.4.7 allow for the effective use of renewable energy resources, especially where it minimizes the local impacts on neighboring properties and non-renewable energy use. Again, the application seems fairly consistent with those policies. Staff wanted to provide the design constraints map that was a part of the application for you. There was some two archaeological sites that staff worked with the applicants to avoid, so they will not be disturbing these sites, and then they are avoiding this existing stock pond as well. There is no FEMA floodplain on the site. So that was really the only design constraints that the applicants were working with. Any questions on that? Okay. South Central Comprehensive Plan, the project is proposed is within the West Area Planning District, and the West Area Planning District acknowledges that noise constraints are a factor in this area due to Fort Carson's artillery range. The plan also acknowledges the area is difficult to access because of the terrain and roads, and it also acknowledges that the roads are sometimes impassable in this area. The plan generally discourages residential development in this area, and the solar array is not anticipated to have any negative impacts to the road in this area, therefore being consistent with the small area plan. And I believe Ms. Nykamp is going to come up and discuss a couple of the engineering analysis slides.
Good morning, Elizabeth Nykamp, Engineering Review Manager for Planning and Community Development. The subject site lies both in the Sand Creek and the Midway drainage basins, so that tells you how high up it is at that basin split. So there is no floodplain. There will be multiple extended detention basins constructed to mitigate for permanent water quality impacts. So at each sub-basin, they've designed a small water quality pond at the downstream side of each sub-area of the site, consisting of, I don't know, probably five or seven different ponds. The site is not platting, so drainage fees will not be applied. And the site has very limited potential for erosion in general. They're keeping most of the vegetation. The vegetation can still grow underneath these solar panels. I've discussed it in great length with some of their folks on the applicant side. And so they're really good about, you know, having some paths to get through between these solar arrays, but in general, the vegetation will remain. As for traffic, they have limited their heavy truck traffic to a specific route. They actually have to go north if they're coming from the south and exit at a specific exit coming from the north to the south. So they can't exit going north. They have to go up an exit, come back. So for their heavier truck traffic, that'll go that way. All of their light all of their light passenger vehicles, their workers, and their smaller truck traffic, they won't have any impact to the road because it's just normal what you and I would drive. There is a small section of public road, and we'll see that in a moment. You saw it before. The rest of the roads that are internal, everybody keeps calling them a road. They have not been constructed to county standards. So I think that's important to understand that there's no pavement. There's a road cross section. However, the haul routes that have been identified in that map and that video that they have, and I do have the haul route map in here, I believe, it's in such poor shape that I don't know that I could drive it in my little bitty car. You know, if I had my husband's big vehicle, four-wheel drive, and up off the ground, you could probably pass these roads quite easily. Even though my little car is a four-wheel drive, it's very small, very low to the ground. You would not want to put a car like that on these roads currently due to the rutting. The rutting is so bad, and we do have video. They video the whole entire haul route for us. So here is the haul route. So the blue, I should use my mouse, my apologies. The blue section here would be how they exit, and this portion is public, so I-25 obviously, and then this portion is county. Then this is the El Hombre view, which is all dirt and in very, very poor shape. And I think that's my last slide. Yes, any questions?
Commissioners, any questions for engineering? Thanks. And Carrie, if you don't mind, before we finish up the presentation and move into the questions and answers, I think we can take a quick break and resume at 10 after 10. Any objections to that? Okay, with that. Okay, looks like everybody's back. We'll come back to order. Thank you for your consideration there. And we'll continue with the staff report.
Commissioners, I apologize. I should have mentioned this when I was going over the requested waivers. Unlike other applications before you, there are typically waiver findings that are cited when applicants request waivers. Those waiver findings are waivers for subdivision design standards. The waivers here are not waivers for subdivision design standards. Therefore, those waiver findings do not apply here. And I should have said that on the record because these are not subdivision design standards. This is a zoning overlay. And I apologize for not clarifying that when I read that slide. That's my fault. And that would conclude staff's presentation unless there are any other questions.
Did you want to go over any of the conditions?
I did not prepare a slide, but I am happy to answer any questions that are, and I can put them up on the overhead if you would like.
Commissioners, Mr. Gioia?
Mr. Chair. Carrie, you talked about what's around in the industrial, you know, to the east, north, south. Not a lot of talk about what's to the west, the more residential feel to the west. We got two responses in favor, but were I didn't hear anything, and maybe I just missed it. Was notification sent to all of the adjoining property owners to the west, and was there just no response from them, or what?
Notification was sent by the applicants at the initiation when they submitted into our EDARP or our electronic review. Staff also sent notification to the adjacent property owners prior to this hearing, notifying them of this hearing and the board hearing later this month. And there were multiple meetings between the Tradewinds company and the neighborhood. Actually, former Commissioner Heisey kind of led the community outreach down there, and I believe he is here in the audience and would be able to answer questions if there are any about the community outreach that has occurred.
Yeah, I'm always happy to see that there has been a lot of community outreach, a lot of community meetings, but I also know that I know how people are. They will say, well, I didn't hear about that meeting. So knowing that it was actually sent to their homes, that's what I was looking for. So thank you.
This is Dave Iderola again with Tradewind Energy. Just to address your point, we invited people within a half mile of us, at least to the community meetings, and then additionally during the NEPA process, we also noticed people within a half mile. So, we tried to reach out to as many people as we possibly could. So,
and we appreciate that. Thank you.
Any other questions, Mr. Gioia?
No.
Any other questions for staff? Well, it will come as no surprise that I do. So I understand. So this is a zoning action. So in theory, they could put up a wind farm, correct?
No.
Okay. With a wind and solar energy overlay, what would prohibit that?
It is specific to their request, which is for the solar array and apparatuses. It is not for wind towers. In fact, their specific... I'm going to go back to, I think this will clarify. So previously, Lori kind of highlighted it, and I mentioned it, but I should have been more thorough. We talked about it being an overlay and that they established their own dimensional standards for that. So those dimensional standards are actually in their WSEO map, which should be attached, although it is very small and hard to read. It actually says, it states each apparatus and the height, and I think I went over that. So that in itself would limit the uses and those standards. There is no wind meteorological pole, like a wind tower, allowed based on that, as well as that's not what's in their letter of intent. So they could not just put turbines out there.
I understand. Here's where I'm going with this, and I'm trying to make sure that the interests of the property owners are protected, because policy 6.1.9 says that any viable residential properties need to be reasonably protected from adverse impacts. There are some 2.5 residentially zoned RR5 and RR2.5 within this property, and some are actually owned by a home corporation. So they're viable residential properties, so we need to protect those. In the event, I'm using hyperbole here to make the point, so I want to be clear about that. I don't anticipate this to happen, but if for some reason something were to happen to the solar array, or they were unable to get the PPA and decide not to build, the WSEO zoning overlay would still apply to all of the associated properties. Is that true?
The WSE overlay would apply to everything here in red,
right,
but it will only allow what is identified in their application.
Okay, but so, what if a subsequent property owner purchased the land from the current company?
they could only do what is allowed, what was requested in this application. So, for instance, if Tradewind decided to sell it to a different solar company and that solar company did obtain a power purchase agreement, they could build what is designed before you today.
Okay, so that's all they could do is the solar.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yes, sir.
Let me move to conditions. There are two that I want to ask a question about. The first is, if you can go to the engineering transportation slide, please.
I apologize. You say drainage?
One more.
Okay.
Thank you. At the bottom, you notice it says the developer is required to restore to existing or better than existing conditions. But condition 14 doesn't say that.
May I have the overhead, please?
I think it says drivable condition. Is there a reason for an inconsistency in the language there?
Yes, sir. The PowerPoint slide is not identifying the condition verbatim.
Correct.
It's just a point to discussion. Condition 14 on page 16 of your record would be the actual condition. And without staff identifying a, to be very careful how I say this, the situation or conditions of the existing roads, if the applicants restore them to a drivable condition, they will be better than what they are today.
Oh, okay. And then condition...
That's a delicate topic, as you can understand.
I understand. I tell you, where I'm coming from on this is I just want to make sure that the residents' rights and are protected here with something other than a trust us verbal agreement. And so we hear information saying they're going to restore it to existing or better, and then we see drivable. And I just want to make sure I understand the, and I do. The last question I have for you is on condition number 6. And it says that in the event there's no response within 48 hours after submission of a construction or a maintenance activity, it's to be interpreted as approval. Bless you. What I'm a little bit concerned about is there's a possibility that an application could be submitted and not received, and then it could be theoretically problematic, and if nobody hears anything, is there a reason why there's not a condition in there relative to some period of time after acknowledgement or some requirement for acknowledgement?
I did not craft this condition. It's standard language that we pulled from Mr. Dossie's applications for the wind farm, as you know. The intent of this condition is that although the applicant has stated that they will not be constructing at night, if for some reason that they needed to, they would have to request from Planning and Community Development the ability to do so. So Monday through Friday are our business operations. Everything is digital now via eDARP. So we don't accept applications unless they're complete. So if they submitted something on a Saturday, that wouldn't start the clock on the 2 days, because until it's actually accepted and we request a payment, the clock doesn't start. So we have some built-in protections with our electronic review system.
So there's a built-in protection that won't let an application get lost or overlooked?
No, sir. It won't, because, knock on wood, eDARP tracks down to the second when an applicant makes a submission, and when it is triaged, when we send a payment request, and when that payment is received to the second. So the clock is ticking.
Thank you. Mm-hmm. Any other questions for staff? Thank you. At this time, then, I will invite any audience members who may wish to speak in favor of the application. We do have one. If you could sign in, please, and then state your name for the record.
Good morning. My name is Todd Evans. I'm the Deputy City Manager with the City of Fountain. And as it's said on the slide, we would like to come forward in support of the project. A lot of folks don't realize that the racetrack itself and that a lot of land is in the City of Fountain. And last week, we had one of the owners of PPIR come into the city and express some concern about the lack of any transportation to the south of the big piece that's just to the north of this project. So the city is in favor of the project itself, and we have requested of the owner, and they have been willing to sit down with the owners of PPIR and work out the possibility of some access points to the south or to the west, because that one piece that you saw to the north of this project is about 600 acres. And right now, PPIR, they have been in the process of working on a PUD to annex that into the City of Fountain, primarily for the uses that we understand of being commercial, mostly industrial down in that area. But as we all know, PPIR was used as a staging area for the fire in Midway a couple of weeks ago. So when that happens in your backyard, you start to look at the public safety issues, not only on your property, but surrounding your property. So that's primarily what their concerns are. And we've been very appreciative that the owners of this project are willing to sit down with them and long-term work that out. So that might be a change, and I just wanted to come and let you know that might be a change that you might see before it goes in front of the commissioners. It's just an access point so that we have some public safety routes leading to the west and possibly to the south of those two properties. But the city is in support of the project itself.
Thank you. Any questions for Mr. Evans? Thank you, sir.
Thank you. You bet.
Is there anyone else in the audience who wishes to speak in favor of the application? Anyone who wishes to speak in opposition to the application? Seeing none, give the applicant an opportunity to make any final comments or rebuttal.
I don't believe we have any other comments, although I will point out, if I could have the PowerPoint again real quick. You had a question about change of ownership in that R1 zone. That actual area is one of the areas we would be purchasing should this move forward. So,
thank you.
And thank you for your time. Appreciate
thank
it.
You. With that, we'll have the testimony portion closed. Commissioners, any discussion on the item? Mr. Master?
Not necessarily a discussion. I just want to say thank you guys for everything you did to reach out to the community, working with Carrie. I like to see when people come in here that have plans like this where you have actively engaged the community and have allowed the community to have input, and that input has actually been taken and you guys have actually acted upon it. So I just want to say thank you for that. I think that's great. I wish we would see more of that from people developing things in this area. And then the other thing, I had to laugh a little bit about the road going, hey, you have to reinstall the chug holes and roots when you're done. You know, I mean, I get it. I'm glad we did that discussion. It's really good. And anyways, I think people are going to be very happy with that end result on that access. I think it'll be a lot easier on their vehicles, although the maintenance people in the area may not like it because they'll have less to work on. But I really do appreciate you guys doing that, and thank you.
Any other comments, commissioners? I have just one. When I came into this, I had some pretty serious concerns about the conditions associated with this, not the application itself. I still have minor concerns, but they've been addressed, and it's not enough to cause me to vote against this. Ms. Solicitrice?
Yes, I'd like to thank Chief Tatum for his letter of support. I think that this is helpful. Helpful also for fire mitigation in that area, if God forbid that should be needed. So I just appreciate your letter of support for this.
Thank you. Any other comments? With that, the chair will entertain a motion.
Mr. Chair.
Mr. Joya.
As regards regular item WSEO 17-001, Front Range Midway Solar Energy Generation Plan Overlay District Rezone, Wind Solar Overlay Energy Overlay, I move for approval under the new standard resolution, page 27, with 16 conditions, 2 notations, and 2 waivers.
Second.
Thank you. We have a motion and a second regarding item 3, WSEO 17001, Wind Solar Energy Overlay for Front Range Midway Solar Energy Generation Plan Overlay District Rezone.
with 16 conditions, 2 notations, and 2 waivers in accordance with this approval on page 27. Is there any discussion on the motion? With that, the chair will entertain the vote. Mr. Gioia.
Aye.
Mr. Creeley.
Aye.
Mr. Mastin.
Aye.
Ms. Luciatrice.
Aye.
Ms. Dillon.
Aye.
Ms. Friedman.
Aye.
And the chair votes aye, and the recommendation to the Board of County Commissioners for approval is unanimous at a vote of 7-0. Thank you. We will now move to the second item on the regular agenda, item number 4, VA-16-006, a variance of use for, boy, I will destroy this, Beauperthay, with 2 conditions and 4 notations. And with that, have a staff introduction.
Apologize about that.
It's okay.
Carrie Parsons with Planning and Community Development. Let's see here. Switch PowerPoints for you. Okay, this is a variance of use request, file number VA-16006. The approval and review criteria for a variance of use, which is section 5.3.4, I'll go ahead and cover for you. The variance of use review criteria, strict application of any of the provisions of the code, the Land Development Code, would result in peculiar and exceptional practical difficulties or unique hardship. The proposed use is compatible with the surrounding area, harmonious with the character of the neighborhood, not detrimental to the surrounding area, not detrimental to the future development of the area, or health, safety, welfare, inhabitants of the residents in the county. The proposed use will be able to meet air, water, odor, and noise standards established by county, state, and federal regulations. The proposed use would comply with applicable requirements of the Land Development Code and county, state, and federal regulations, except those portions varied by this variance of use action. The proposed use will not adversely affect wildlife or wetlands. The applicant has addressed all of the off-site impacts. The site plan for the proposed variance of use will provide for adequate parking, traffic circulation, open space, fencing, screening, and landscaping. Sewer, water, stormwater drainage, fire protection, police protection, and roads will be available and adequate to serve the roads, to serve the needs of the proposed variance of use as designed and proposed. Issues and concerns from staff. Staff had recently done a site inspection. I believe it was on Thursday of last week. Staff did notice some activity outside of the fenced area, and that is an existing concern. Issues from neighbors. There was actually no letters in opposition of this application. There was 4 letters received. You should have those in your packets, and they were for the application. This is the concern that staff had. You can see the existing fence area, the asphalt here, and some of the operations occurring in the public right-of-way area. At this time, staff would like to ask the applicant's representative from Monument Valley Engineering to come up and provide a presentation to the Planning Commission.
David Gorman, Monument Valley Engineers. We just go by MVE. We are representing Gabe and Tricia Beauperthay. I did practice this. Beauperthay. For this application, I know you've read the staff reports and you've gone through all that, but I did want to provide this presentation, provide some background, and make our request. The site is located at the northeast corner of Orchid and Notice Streets, and it consists of 5 existing lots in Park Vista Addition Subdivision, And that area is considered kind of an enclave in the county to the east of Austin Bluffs and north of Academy. The site is 0.94 acres and it's zoned RM30. And there's a picture of the site. The green shaded area there is the five lots. On that, you can see the existing garage, the utility building that's in the southeast corner. And let's see if I right there. The other thing to notice on this map is the surrounding roads that are platted, but not necessarily existing, and I'll show you some of that a little bit later. The other thing is the floodplain line. That's right there is the 100-year FEMA floodplain line, and then there's the 500-year, and that line there is the floodway that's designated by FEMA. That's where the majority of the flow is in those zones. And then the owner, Gabe and Tricia, live just to the north of there in that yellow shaded area. Their house is here, and then they have some additional garages here. Also, which we'll see in a little bit later, they have used this area here as those four lots as a storage for vehicles and other things as part of their landscaping business. And there are some legal non-conforming trailers located on that part as well. And when we get to the when we get to the other photos, I'll show you where those are. But I think the main concern on this is the contractor equipment yard. So we are requesting approval of the variance for the contractor's equipment yard and outdoor storage. And this is a result of a complaint, and it was it wasn't an intentional violation. You should know that the Beaupertis bought their home in 2001. They later bought the adjacent five lots starting in 2005, and then completed the purchase in 2008. Before that, the owner of that property used that existing garage, that existing utility building, as storage for yard equipment and some other heavier equipment, big mowers and things. The owner didn't realize that that wasn't an okay thing. And so over the years, all those five lots that we're discussing gathered some things that the Beaupertis used in their business, but since that complaint, even though Carrie mentioned that we do have some things still to take care of, there has been some activity getting all those items out and away, cleared up. So it's not a static situation. They realized they needed to do something, and are in the process of getting everything cleared up prior to getting going for approval for the variance. So one thing you should know about the site is the home is on well and on site water treatment system. That's their water and sewer, and they are. Of course, dependent on the county's services, fire, what's available in police, also the variance, as I mentioned before, the variance site is located in the FEMA flood hazard area. As I mentioned, the Beaupertis have been there since 2001. They've been good neighbors. We know in some of these areas these local roads are they're not exactly first on the list to get plowed, and they're not first on the list to have other kinds of maintenance. So Gabe, if need be, goes out, plows the road all the way up Orchid, so not only himself but the neighbors farther north on Orchid can get out. And when he sees a need for some trimming of trees and things along Orchid Street, he takes care of that. Just because he knows it's something that needs to be done, and he doesn't he's not a bother to anybody in the neighborhood, but more of a help. Here's an aerial photo of the site, and you can see that in this photo. There is some car storage there, and this photo is about almost a year old. Prior to this photo being taken, there was a lot of dumpsters stored on the site, which have been removed by this time. At this point, all the cars in this area have been removed except for one, and a lot of the items here are gone. And so I've got some pictures of that to show you, and I also have some pictures of this corner area here that is the contractor's equipment yard. Another view of that, you can see the surrounding area where it's vacant. It's vacant to the north. There's two parcels here that are actually owned by the county, and then here is Lotus Street, which is really the Temple of Gap floodway, and the Temple of Gap floodway extends up through here as well. When there's into another platted street. The lot lines for these lots here, which would have accessed onto Lotus Street, are about in this area, right here, and then that kind of gives you an idea of where those lots fall. On that one, you can see the location of the lot lines and the creek a little clearer. And here's a view from the Beaupertuis property, looking to the south, and there's one remaining wood pile there, and then there's the car I mentioned, which is actually on its way out, if not this week, then next week. So this area has been cleaned up a lot, and you can see here a little bit of the non-conforming legal trailers that are still in the same place that they've been, and those are going to stay. And then another view from on the west side of Orchid Street, looking past the Beaupertuis residential driveway through their yard to that corner where the building is there. This is another view of a little bit closer to what's going on right now on that corner, and wanted to let you know that not only outside this area, but inside, they've been working on getting a lot of that cleaned up, and our proposal has some other mitigation, and realizing that this area on the outside of the fence needs to go, they are working on that, and so in our plan, we are leaving room to put the parking inside, put these materials that are outside the fence inside the fence, and that they are working on getting that done. They just haven't got it finished yet. What we're looking at here is actually the paved road, and then the driveway into the site is there. This is a view of that same thing from the south, looking to the north, and then there's the building, that's the garage there. our plan to this variance of use map shows that we're going to put a an opaque fence 7 foot high all around the exterior, and also it shows the rearranging of the things that are there right now, putting those, there's two trailers there that are used for storage, getting those away from the property lines and behind the building so that they're not any more visible from the south, and pretty as much covered up from the east or from the west as possible. There are some existing trees around the exterior, evergreen trees that have been planted by the Beaupertuis within the last 18 years, and they're going to plant some more in some of the areas where the tree either the plant either it died, or they just want to put some more in there to provide some more screening. So the screening will be the fence and then the trees. You can see that the separation between these lots, which really have no access at this point, is that drainage way. And this is just a close-up view of that plan, which I'm just to point out that there are areas designated on the four lots for future vehicle storage and low-profile storage. All those things will be lower than the fence. And then there's areas in here designated for parking. So the parking will be out of the right-of-way, and the storage of materials will be out of the right-of-way in this area, and there's areas designated for equipment storage. This is the businesses that occupies that corner site right now is a landscaping business, and they operate during daytime hours. There's a small amount of employees, 1 to 3 employees, that come in the morning, leave at night. They take equipment out to the community where they do their work, and they also take the materials with them. And there's usually not someone occupying this site during the day. It is a successful landscape business. I wanted to talk a little bit about the approval criteria, and starting with undue hardship and the strict application of any of the provisions of this code will result in peculiar and exceptional practical difficulties or undue hardship. We should recognize that the site, the entire 5 lots that we're looking at, is in the floodplain. It's not suitable for multifamily development as the zone is, or even single family development. There is a lack of water there. There's the owner has no water rights there, and they don't want to annex into the city. They like being in the county, and there's people around them that are of that same mind. As I mentioned before, they rent that corner parcel, which allows them to pay their mortgage on the home, and it's a source of income for them. It's as they own the property, we understand that they wouldn't be able to sell it for some other type of development use, and so that's the source of the hardship. In that zone there are certain things that are allowed, but there's really not a suitable use other than what they've been asking to have the variance approved for. And I did mention in that last sentence that there the word sterilization. The goal of this variance is to prevent that sterilization of that property. The site's in an area that it is in transition, but it's also it is more of a rural character to it, and surrounding the site there are several uses that are compatible. There are not townhomes or homes adjacent to the site. There's some room around it, and some space. And there have been other variances granted for nearby properties, variances of use. This is just north. This is the northern neighbor who has a home restoration business in his garage with fenced off area and facilities for that. And to the west, there's some vacant land except for a storage area there that's not related to this. There's on the south side there you can see the townhomes in the back that are in the city, and then on one of those vacant pieces of land that's just across the street from the floodway, there's a storage area fenced off with some vehicles in it. And there is down the street to the southeast, there's a balloon business which is seasonal. They have a storage trailer there and a porta potty there in an open area. And then to the east, this is the area where the variance exists of use, and it's across the drainageway to the east, and you can kind of see the fences and the buildings back there. That's part of that area. The other variance of use approval criteria, the site will not generate any of the concerns about air, water, odor, or noise. There's not activity going on at the site that would cause any of those issues. It will comply with the code requirements when if variance is approved, there will be a site development plan applied for, and which will include the approval of a drainage report and on all the other code requirements that will be necessary for that. It's not in a sensitive area for wildlife, and it will not adversely impact the wildlife or wetlands. The off-site impacts are mainly visual. It's not creating undue traffic. There's the amount of trips are minimal, but the site, the visual impacts are being mitigated with the fencing and the additional trees that will be planted, as well as the space buffer that's to the south. I think that's an important thing. The site will provide adequate parking and screening as one of the criteria requires, and the parking will be inside the fence. Sewer and water for this use is not required, and it's just not available. Those aren't a concern, and the existing services for police protection and fire protection remain in place. We would just request your consideration on this variance, and if there's any questions.
Commissioners, any questions for Mr. Gorman? Mr. Joya.
I live only a few blocks from this spot, so I know this area quite well. I guess my main concern right now is we're only about a block and a half away right here from where the county just undertook a massive cleanup project in the past year. And what guarantees are we getting from the property owners and from the business that's running there that it's not going to turn into the same kind of situation with a bunch of trailers and trash everywhere that eventually the county's going to have to fix?
I would say that the variance of use is conditional. So if that becomes a problem, then it'll become a violation. If there's things that are showing up outside the fence again, and if there are things brought in that shouldn't be there, then there's that normal county process that happens when there's a violation.
It's not much of a process.
The Bois Pertuis are responsible. They're conscientious. They live right there, and they want their neighborhood to be a nice place.
Any other questions, Mr. Joya? Ms. Lucia Treese?
Did you say initially that this was a complaint-driven?
That's correct.
Okay. And the house was bought in 2001, the rest of the property in 2008.
Right.
When was the property owner aware that he was in violation?
It was when the notice was given. It was in 2016, and at that point, he needed some assistance with that, and he contacted me. I know Gabe. He plows the parking lot in my office, at my office, and so he contacted me. We're a small civil engineering firm, and over the last couple of years, we've been so busy. So there's been a little bit of delay in getting to this point, and a lot of that is just the amount of work that I'm having to get done. But so that's Gabe has been aware of this since that time, and has been in contact with you through the whole process, and it's not that he was ignoring anything, or it's just a little bit of getting the work done, the plan done and submitted.
Okay, I can understand that. I guess my concern is, since this was brought to the attention in 2016, why there are still areas that haven't been cleaned up, and that you say that you're still working on. I guess I'm wondering why it hasn't been done in the 2 years.
Okay, I can understand that. Gabe and Tricia have direct control over those four lots that have been substantially cleaned up. All those dumpsters have been removed. You know, there's no pictures of that, but there were a lot of them, and all the cars that were stored there, those are gone, and that's been steadily going on since 2016. Because he's rented and leased the property in the corner, he has a little bit less control. But that renter is aware that it needs to be completed, and they in fact I met with him. He's perfectly willing and actually wants to get that all done, and the goal was to get it finished prior to coming here, but I think our hearing was scheduled a little bit sooner than what he could get it done. So that it is going to happen.
Any other questions for the representative? I just have one, just purely for the record. I understand there's a waiver request in here for landscaping. Can you talk briefly to that, please?
True. We're requesting a waiver for the landscaping, and that has to do with the lack of water. To do appropriate landscaping, we know that takes a lot of water to establish. The trees that he has planted in the past are kind of evergreen tree that tends to survive well without lots of water, with the natural amount of water that falls. But even with that, some of those have died. So while he wants to plant trees on the exterior of the site, we're requesting the waiver of the landscaping so that we don't have to take water from his existing water rights and well permit to do that, which there just isn't the water for it, does it?
Okay. Thank you. Ms. Friedman. Microphone again, please. Thank you.
Does that help?
Yes. Yeah.
Okay. I guess I have to hear the crackling noise first. The owner wasn't aware of the zoning issue, but there was also a lot of trash and dumpsters and these other things. So was the owner also unaware of the general undesirability of trash and dumpsters on lots and things like that? Or just about specifically about the zoning question?
I would say that I don't know if on his property there's ever been a lot of trash. There is lots of trash around and out surrounding his neighborhood, but in his parcels, besides the thing that I mentioned, the dumpsters and the trailers and the cars, and there was a storage pile for some metal, like scrap metal, and another one's for scrap wood. Those weren't trash. That was part of their business. I think that when you go down there, you do see some areas where there's been dumping and trash. And that's not the Boperties.
Any other questions? Sir, I'm sorry. No, thank you. You'll have an opportunity to speak shortly. Any other questions for Mr. Gorman? Okay, thank you, sir. Before we move to the staff presentation, I'm going to take a five-minute break, and we'll resume at 5 after, and then we'll finish the topic.
Okay.
Meeting will come back to order. We'll resume and finish up the topic. And with that, we'll have the staff presentation.
Good morning. Ms. Parsons with Planning and Community Development. I've already read the application into record, and I would like to provide an aerial of the site. Again, this is the five parcels that the applicant owns and purchased in 2008. This is the parcel that his family lives on adjacent. In the staff report, I made a reference to an approved variance for outside storage. This is the location of that for your reference. Yes, sir. Again, the request is for the variance of use for the contractor's equipment yard and associated outside storage, and the waiver for the internal landscaping requirement and roadway landscaping where adjacent to a residential zoning district. A little bit of background on the parcel. The five parcels are within the Park Vista Edition subdivision plat, which was recorded in 1955 prior to the subdivision regulations. There is an existing garage on the property, which was erected in the 1960s. There is no residence on that property. The zoning of the area occurred in 1967 after the Park Vista Edition subdivision was recorded. The Colorado Springs city limits are within 200 feet approximately to both the west and the south property lines. The applicants are requesting the variance of use instead of a map amendment or rezoning due to the inadequate services being available to support many of the allowed uses within the county's commercial and industrial zoning districts. A concurrent site development plan is also under review. Land development code analysis. As we stated, the property is currently zoned residential multi-family dwelling, or RM30. The RM30 zoning district is typically a multi-family urban residential in nature, and the area has remained mostly undeveloped due to a lack of central services such as water and wastewater. The variance, as I pointed out, was approved previously is located about 300 feet from this property line. The area is one of the last remaining enclaves within the city of Colorado Springs. Development within the city of Colorado Springs surrounds this county enclave, consisting of high density residential development to the north, south, and west. And the applicant does not desire to annex into the city of Colorado Springs at this time. Everything you see here that does not have a bold color on top of it is been annexed into the city of Colorado Springs. This yellow color is the remaining RM30 property, and then there is a small pocket of R4 zoned property here. This is the applicant's property, and you can see that pocket of very urban residential attached dwelling units in the city, and then a pocket up in here as well. In terms of zoning compliance, the contractor's equipment yard and outside storage is not allowed in the RM30 zoning district, hence the need for the variance request. In comparison, contractors' equipment yards and associated outside storage would be an allowed use in an industrial zoning district such as I-3, and it would be a special use if this area was zoned commercial. Floodplain map of the site. Again, the site here, and you can see the floodplain. And then I believe Ms. Nykamp is going to come up and present some engineering slides.
Good afternoon, or I guess it's still good morning. Elizabeth Nykamp, Planning and Community Development Engineering. The site is within the designated floodplain. We can see that. The whole entire five lots are. The home itself appears to be out of it. There was Clomer and Lomer's process for this area many years ago. But this extra five lots still lies within that 100-year floodplain zone. There are no additional structures proposed, so I'm good with that in the floodplain. And if you did, you'd have to go through the Regional Building Department floodplain manager to be able to install those, as well as our planning process.
The property is located within the Templeton Gap drainage basin. However, with a variance of use request, no fees will be due. I'm sure if you folks have ever been to this area, especially you, Mr. Joya, that you'd seen that there's some drainage issues big time in this area. A drainage letter was submitted with the site. It did address a little bit of water quality, a little check structure, because the area is so incised here that the applicants is going to put a structure in the southwest corner of their site right before the water goes into this drainage area to help mitigate any damage and impacts, sediment, things like that. For transportation, you can see in the overheads that have been shown that there's really not a road network right around his property the way the right-of-way appears like it is. Most of that is drainage. The only right-of-way, roadway rather, that is constructed is that Orchid Street from the north of his property. Our code does require that if you do put something like this off of a paved street, that you'll be required to pave the first 50 feet of the existing driveway as part of the development plan application. A traffic impact study was not required due to the limited amount of extra daily use that this site would generate. Orchid Street consists of low-grade paving, and it's currently not to a county street section. The county does provide snow removal service in here on occasion if it gets to the list. If I'm not sure how they prioritize their snow removal, but if you get to that point of the list and your snow hasn't melted yet, the county does provide some snow removal for you in this area. This is a photo that we took just last week of the area. So this is at the north end looking south. So you can see way down at the end there that the road, there is a paved road. This is right outside of the facility. This actually was taken off of Google Maps. This is the outside activity that engineering would like to see removed. What you can't quite see here is there's two wooden walls with soil in between, so sand or gravel, and then it's covered with a tarp. It's not a very good picture. There's another one right here. So now you can see those timber walls that have been built to drop the sand. That's what we want removed out of the right-of-way. Or even if it's not in the right-of-way, if it's outside the fence, because you'd have to access it from the right-of-way. This is from the south side of the Beauperty property looking north. These are some of the activities that we'd like to have cease and desist. They just came out and washed their pickup out in the street in the public right of way. So we'd like to request that's part of that one condition that says you must refrain from any outside the fence area activity. Those are the two specific activities that we're looking at. I think that's Gary's turn now. I do have one other thing to add for history in this area. If I could have the overhead for just a moment, this is a very poor rendition of this, and I scribbled it out this morning because I couldn't find the one that I had created about 10 years ago in this area. Am I not in the right location? Park Haven Village is over in this area, and that's a developed area within the city. Here's the two Beauperty properties. All of these X's and EPCs, JRs, or JKs, and X's here are vacant property that the city and county jointly are trying to acquire. These numbered lots down here are what Kerry called attached single-family attached homes. I call them duplexes. So there's quite a bit of vacant property. This property here is owned by one property owner, and it does have a home on it. These are all homes, but these are all vacant properties that between the city and the county we are trying to acquire. The X's mean that they're privately owned. The CS, they're owned by the city of Colorado Springs. However, they still are in El Paso County, and EPC is county.
Mr. Joya.
Why? Why is the city and county trying to require them? Is there a plan for that, or is it just to make sure that no one's in the floodplain?
We're not requiring it, but we are requesting it.
No.
So, yes, it's because if we flip to this picture, the drainage comes from the east. The city of Colorado Springs boundary is just to the east of this row of, just east of this row of county parcels is the city of Colorado Springs. We have two drainage ways coming in here, and they converge right here. Then you become the main stem. This is the main stem of the Templeton Gap floodway. It comes down, comes all the way down to this drainage problem that we all know is over here. So the city and the county, and I did call the city and reach Brian Kelly with the city engineering department. He'd almost forgotten about this. Brian Kelly and I worked on this probably 15, 18 years ago. And what we want to try to do between the city and the county is acquire all these parcels so that we can then possibly someday upgrade or stabilize this channel, this drainage way. So that's where this map comes in to let you know that all those CSs are owned by the city of Colorado Springs within El Paso County, Colorado Springs ownership. The EPCs here, here, here. I think there's one more over here somewhere. We're acquiring those on purpose. Most of them are vacant property, with the exception of these down in here, are all vacant. And it is 100% due to the floodway.
Ms. Friedman?
Thank you.
Yeah, I have a question. On the map that you were showing, you guys had previously described a variance for a vehicle storage on one of those. Was that on one of the X's?
I do know that the balloon company is in this area. I don't know if they have a variance. And Carrie will have to point to which one of these off-site parcels to the east is the one with the variance that she mentioned.
To the east.
May I have the PowerPoint, please?
There it is.
This is the variance that I referenced for the outside storage in the staff report. This, the applicant had mentioned, I believe it's called Rocky Mountain Restoration. Mm-hmm. I could not find a variance in record for that, and there is no current code violation on that. So this is the only one that is an existing that is still remains active and in the county's land use jurisdiction.
How recently was that variance granted?
This one.
This one right there. Oops. Yeah, you can't see where I'm pointing. Yeah, this big star.
Okay. Let me double check the staff report. I believe I put it in there.
Okay.
I think it was 02, but let me verify, please.
Okay, thanks.
Since the file number was VA02017, that would make it 2002.
So, yes. Okay. Thank you. So, planning staff's final slide, if there are no further questions, is that because of the discovery of the activity outside of the fenced area last week, planning staff would recommend that if you do choose to make a recommendation for approval, that you add this additional condition that applicant shall confine the activities as described in the variance of use application to within the fenced area.
So administratively, purely for clarification, then this would be three conditions, four notations, and one waiver on this item.
Yes, sir.
Thank you. Do we have any other questions for staff? Ms. Friedman.
Yeah. One more question. When you said legal non-conforming trailers, could you explain that?
Yes, I can. I'm going to go to the aerial for a second so we can see them. So when previous employee, Ms. Jackson, code enforcement officer, provided the applicant with his citation, she initially cited him not for rubbish, but for outside storage and a contractor's equipment yard. At that time, there was the existing trailers that were used for the applicant's personal storage. They were not used for the renter's contractor's equipment yard. The garage was also in existence since 1960s, and that was deemed non-conforming but not within violation, as was the trailers. Now, if these trailers were to be utilized for a rental for storage associated with the contractor's equipment yard, they would no longer be deemed an existing non-conforming use. But it is our understanding that these trailers are only being used by the applicant and his residents, not the commercial business. Therefore, they are remaining non-conforming.
Any other questions for staff? Thank you. Oh, I do have one. The part on transportation said the transportation fees and impact study weren't required, but there's a notation number 4 that seems to I'm wondering why notation 4 is there.
Notation 4, road impact fees shall be paid at the time of approval of each site development plan for uses that will cumulatively generate 100 more daily vehicle trips. That's kind of a catch-all so that if this operation did get excessive, the county then could come back and say, okay, you've exceeded your trips. Now we need to reevaluate that.
So just in case things change.
Thank you. It is.
Question? Thank you. With that, we'll open public testimony. Is there anyone in the audience who wishes to speak in favor of the variance? Seeing none, anyone in opposition? Seeing none, would the applicant like to make any final comments?
Dave Gorman, MVE. I would just like to confirm that the existing trailers are used according to what Ms. Parsons stated, the personal use of the owner, and that we are the owners in agreement with the additional condition that you noted, and also the other ones that were already there, and the use of the area outside the fence will be addressed immediately.
Any questions? Thank you. With that, we'll call the testimony portion closed. Commissioners, any discussion? Mr. Joya.
I'd just like to say I know some of the history of how this body tends to look at things coming after the fact, you know, trying to fix things after the fact. I have to say I do believe that the owners did not intentionally violate the code on this. I'm glad to see their efforts on cleanup, even if it has been a little slow. I, living in this area, I know that this, if there's going to be a spot for this, that this is exactly where it should be. So seeing as how I do tend to come down on the side of personal property rights, I will be voting in for approval on this.
Thank you. Any other commissioners?
Yes, sir.
Mr. Creeley.
I, too, am a hard sell on variance of use. It just irks me to think about it. But in this case, I think this is a good use for a property that can't do much else. And because of that. However, at least part of this is all dependent that the look of this stays as good as it can be. If it gets raggedy or ugly, somebody's going to complain about it, and then you're going to be back here and... And I don't want to listen to it one more time. So we keep it neat and clean, and it's got my vote for sure.
Thank you. Mr. Matt? I'll be voting for this, in favor of this. I would just like to, we got 3 weeks before it goes before the county commissioners. It would be really nice to see updated photos with all the issues being complied with so that the commissioners don't have to question that as well. So if we can 21 days get it taken care of, that would be a really good thing to see for the commissioners. I think it would show absolutely great faith on your part as well.
Thank you. Any other comments from the commission?
No other comments? With that, the chair will entertain a motion.
Mr. Chair.
Mr. Joya.
As regards regular item number 4, VA-16-006, variance of use for the Beaupertuis property, I move for approval under the new standard resolution, page 51, with three conditions, including the new one presented by staff, four notations and one waiver.
Thank you. We have a motion. Do we have a second?
Second.
Ms. Dillon. We have a motion by Mr. Joya and a second by Ms. Dillon for item number 4, VA-16-006, variance for Beaupertuis, with three conditions, four notations, and one waiver in accordance with the standard resolution on page 51. Do we have discussion on the motion? Seeing none, chair will take the roll. Mr. Joya.
Aye.
Mr. Creeley.
Aye.
Mr. Mastin.
Aye.
Ms. Luciatrice.
Aye.
Ms. Dillon.
Aye.
Ms. Friedman.
Aye.
And the chair votes aye. And the Planning Commission, the motion is approved unanimously, 7-0, with a recommendation of Board of County Commissioners for approval. That closes the last of our regular items. And does this understand we have a meeting on the 17th? Staff, do you have any other additional comments?
That's correct. Mr. Chair, we will have
Mr. Dossie.
Yes, thank you. Craig Dossie, Planning Community Development. We will have five items for you on the 17th. We have three consent items and two regular items. I was going to get up and report exactly what I'm talking about, but at this point, I may want to notify security that we have somebody sneaking into the hearing room back here behind me. We will have five items for you. I'm sorry I wasn't here this morning. Happy to report that our staff won one of the three innovation awards that are given out to all the various departments throughout the county. As a matter of fact, our department, thank you, our department was nominated for three innovation awards out of the total 12 nominations throughout the county, so I think that says a lot about our staff. So it was a great morning for us, and it's great to be able to recognize our staff when they do great things, which they tend to do pretty much every day. So it's a positive day for us, but we will look forward to seeing you all in 2 weeks.
Thanks. Congratulations on behalf of all of us.
And it was for EDARP, by the way. I don't know if I mentioned that, but yeah. It was for EDARP. We are a matter of days away from releasing basically full-blown use of EDARP for our minor applications. We already have it for the major applications. And what that will mean is essentially we will be 100% paperless in just a matter of days. So kind of exciting time.
Right. So with that, I just remind the commissioners who didn't hear the testimony on the continued item to please review that before that. And with that, we are adjourned.